Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back, everybody. We are live, Millennial Dentist Podcast from Big Sky, Montana. Two fellow doctors here. One longtime buddy of mine. Gosh, long time. Dental school, met him in dental school. Dr. Zach Berry. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks, man. First time. First time talker.
First time talker along. Yeah. Maybe listener.
Yeah. No, I've been listening.
And Dr. Parrish King, doc. Introduce yourself.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having me here. This is unexpected for me. I'm just kind of impromptu and just kind of
so abrupt.
Met you here on the slopes and glad I did. But Parrish King from Andalusia, Alabama, small town, about 10,000 people. I'm in a group practice. There's four dentists in my group practice. We have seven hygienists and about 17 ops in total. But we do, what I would consider routine general dentistry, and I'm an associate in the practice, and I do some of the more specialty stuff, which is kind of fun for me, which is what I enjoy doing anyway.
But you know, what's cool about that is, to me, I think that's where our professions are going.
In big cities, for sure.
I think y'all are way, well, not Andalusia, Alabama, no offense, is not a big city,
the metropolitan of Birmingham.
What are we considering? My point is, though, is like that, like, I think group practice is where we're headed.
I mean, look at medicine. That's where every single
100%.
Yeah,
and really,
it doesn't have to be corporate.
It doesn't have to be corporate. But like, wow, one cone beam. Even though they don't have a cone beam, don't get me started. four dentists, 17 ops, and 7,000 hygienists, and they don't have a freaking cone beam.
I'm working that. I'm massaging that one in.
That gives me anxiety right now, but. Still, group practice, I think group practice is huge. I think that's what we're going to. Even your, I mean,
Birmingham's
seen a lot more of it. Tell about what you're in right now.
I'm an associate in a practice in Birmingham, Alabama. Moved there for a residency after dental school and stuck around. And I do think that the group practice model is kind of where it's going, just to keep up with the competition that you have.
I mean, it's a good way. Like for us, we can refer to ourselves.
Absolutely.
Sure.
So since I do implants and sedation, wisdom tooth removal, third molar, I do molar root canal. I'm doing some surgeries that the other doctors don't want to do.
What do the other three do? They just suck? Do they not do anything?
No, they're great.
You can't say that off the record. let me re-ask my question. Do they do does one love pediatric dentistry?
You know,
or just one love orthodontic, like just one love ortho as a GP?
I do the orthodontics in the practice too. So,
so you do all the specials.
He's the guy.
So you don't do any fillings.
I'm the boutique dentist in the group practice. I do the specialty services. They refer to me, and then I refer back to them, which works. But no, they do what I would say is the routine general dentistry. They do full arch cases. It's not like they don't do that. But if it comes down to an implant or they have a question, they refer to me, which is awesome.
I think we are moving into a future where I don't think you can do general dentistry of the 90s and survive. Like I don't think that you can do fillings and crowns and graduate with $300,000 in loans and make it
as a single practice owner. Yourself.
I don't think do you all agree or disagree with that? I don't think you can do it. I think you have to do more special procedures.
I think it depends on your idea of making it, you know?
Well, sure.
Yeah. And I think I was going to say, I disagree slightly because I think you can, okay. Because I've seen it. You know, I live in that practice setting because before I came to the practice, and I guess that would have been 2008, they were not doing that. That was being referred out, and the practice was booming then, and it is now too. And I guess when I came to the practice and added a few extra things like what you're mentioning, you know, having those already in house is great. We draw from Florida. We draw from 45 minutes away. There's the closest specialist to me is really about an hour and a half away, and so it's kind of a no-brainer for us to be able to provide those services, but. But can you make it as a as a, you want to say a drill and fill doc. I think you can, but you definitely, your mentality, your practices. I mean, if you want to do that and not burn out, then you got to love doing that.
Well, and maybe I think my part of the problem I think I see with it is like, I'm also coming from like the reality of like the more and more graduating dentists want to live in Nashville, New Orleans, Austin, Miami, LA, like Denver, Boulder. Like they don't want to live. They don't, they want to go live in like,
You may say that, but I'm wondering if it's the spouse, because I
well, maybe you're right. You very well could be right.
I had a conversation with someone recently high up in our dental association, and I told him, I said, look, I said, y'all are trying to figure out ways to attract the dentist to these small communities that need dentists,
sure,
and
are wanting dentists,
and will actually, I mean, really support them, not just go see them. I mean, like community wide support them, but sometimes it's not the dentist. It's how do you not convince the dentist, but it's how do you convince the spouse? Because all the dental schools, where are they? They're in big cities.
You pull all these kids from small towns into a big city for 4 years, and they get a little taste of living in that big city. And then all of a sudden, you're like, okay, now go back home to that small town and work. And everyone's like, I guess that's
part of my reason for saying that is because if you want to be a drill and field, I mean, look, I mean, you could go. I mean, I have a buddy who I think of Brandon Smith and way east. He's not even, Cookeville will be like the suburb of where he's at, which is like a small town in Tennessee. And he's raking printing money. I mean, he's the king of whatever city he's in, but you know, he's also an hour and a half from the nearest airport that can get him anywhere major. You know, so there's a cost benefit. It's called cost benefit thing, which I have no problem with. I just think that's part of the problem is that, and maybe that's a fundamental problem that we have to figure out. And people should take on to begin with is that if you've got this kind of loans, maybe you don't need to be that picky about the fact that you want to go live in the downtown city where everybody else wants to be. And there's three different dentists on the block. I mean, maybe that's the problem. I mean, what's your experience with that?
The loans nowadays is a big deal. I work with a lot of residents still. I go back and teach with them at the hospital. And that's something that I bring up to them because I help them with looking at contracts for potential jobs next year. And I start early around Christmas. I'm like, you got 6 months, time to find a job, kid. And I talk to them about like, look, you're going to have loans and you got to do this and you got to do that. Like it's time to figure out really what you want to do. Cause if you want to go to a small town, you can get paid and you're going to do really well, yeah. Or you can go live in Atlanta and you can get a decent paycheck and fight all that. But you're going to be, you know, just another kind of fishing. Well, and the problem and is it's a lower
paycheck most likely because you're one of many and it's a higher cost of living.
Absolutely.
So it's like a double whammy right there that you get hit with.
I think for me personally, I have loans that I knew I was going to have loans coming out of school, but it was something that those numbers and everything really didn't add up until I was like third year, fourth year. And I was actually staring down the barrel and was like, wow, I got to repay these. It's going to take me a long time. I got to figure out where I'm going to be and what I'm going to do. And it was kind of a reality check and it still sucks. So
no, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So Paris, let's talk about a little bit about your journey. So how did you, you're still an associate, correct?
Correct. No. That's something I struggle with. So anyway,
I'm kind of a, I mean, in hanging out with me, I think a little bit, you've already gotten that to a degree that I'm somewhat of like, I like to instigate things. I'm very black and white. I'm a little bit. So my question to you is, so tell me your story. Tell me now, because you've been out longer than we have, and why are you still an associate?
Sure.
And what's your next move? Because look, my whole point in this whole thing is it's all about paying it forward and figuring out, and it's the reality of what the situation is. And your situation is not uncommon from a lot of people.
Right.
So tell us your story.
Okay. So I graduated. Well, my dad's a dentist. My grandfather's a dentist, so third generation dentist. And I'm in the same practice that my dad joined the practice that my grandfather's in. I joined the practice that my dad's in. And
I'm a big fan of family practice.
UAB. Went to UAB Dental School. 2003, 2007.
Yeah, can't win them all.
And I did a residency program, University of Florida College of Dentistry in Jacksonville, which was a great experience. Had a chance to do VA, but I chose to do the College of Dentistry down there in Jacksonville because I was already starting to have to deal with patients and getting them to understand what was there and that they were actually having to put their own money out there. And I knew when I was moving back home, I was going to be treating patients that were going to have to pay for their own dentistry. So I chose to go that route for that year. I learned a lot, really did. And then that, again, main focus, I already mentioned it, was to try to add to the practice. I didn't want to take away from. So by adding all that to the practice, I also came in, and we actually came to terms from the very beginning, even though my dad is the owner, practice owner, he has a partner, that they were, you know, 50-50. We went through Mercer transitions and kind of got it set up so that, you know, at this point in time, I was going to start accumulating money in an escrow account more or less. And that was going to go towards a buy-in. And, you know, when year four came along and that was supposed to start happening, I just never kicked it in. And that part of that is, I play it safe. I'm conservative. And so, unfortunately, you know, if you want to make money, you got to take a risk. And in my town of 10,000 people, there's 4, 5, 6, 7 general dentists, and there's 4 practices, and 3 of them are within 20 feet of each other. And there's an orthodontist right there. And so I'm kind of sitting there looking at, all right, so do I buy into this practice? Am I willing to take on that debt? And then my dad's close to retirement. And so do I buy into it now at a third to turn around and buy his third? And so it's kind of one of those things. I just kicked the can down the road a little bit and just said, well, maybe when he's ready to retire, I'll buy his half. And that's, so I was kind of thinking debt on top of debt on top of debt. And I never quite grasped the fact that, all right, well, hey, look, if you're an owner, now you start actually sharing in that hygiene pool. You're sharing in the practice, you know, the extra income. So you should be able to pay off that debt. And if I'd done it like I was supposed to, I'd be an owner right now. And so really, truthfully, I should have made that decision back when I should have made that decision. And I'd be an owner right now, enjoying the benefits of that. Also enjoying the benefits of being able to make more decisions in the practice. And we probably have a cone beam. But yeah. But at the same time, you know, I'm here in Big Sky with my family, enjoying what I do.
Sure, 100%.
Actually getting to speak about what I do. And so have I made an awful decision? No. You know, could I have made a better decision, you know, financially? Sure. But you know, just because I am where I am now because of the decisions I made, that's all right. I'm cool with that.
That's the beauty of what we do. And I love that about what we do, because we haven't, very few professions do we have an opportunity to kind of write our story and kind of have ebb and flow that can be positive, negative, whatever. But ultimately, like, it is what it is. And it ends up being a positive trajectory. And I think that's cool. Cause like, I look at my wife and like, we talk about this in like corporate America and that sort of thing. And it's like, gosh, man, that they freaking work for the man. And like, it's just a different world. And so, man, I get that. So my question then to you would be, okay, so now what's next for you then?
Well, unfortunately, my dad's getting closer and closer to retirement. So, you know, it's still one of those things. Even if I decided today and said, well, I'm ready to buy in now, I'm still like, well, really, I should buy his half and he should start working for us as an associate.
So how long have you been out of dental school?
So I graduated 2007. 2008 was residency. So right at 10 years.
Okay, so right at 10 years. And so your debate in buying is what? Because your dad may be retiring completely. So you're saying, should I just wait and buy his whole half?
Right. Well, actually, I think at this point in time, it'd probably make the most sense for me to buy his half now and to have him kind of swap roles, take over as the associate, get payment percent on his production or collection.
100%. Yes.
Yeah. And
because
take over that role. Because actually, honestly,
the beauty of your dad being
better.
There is right. Great. There's no negative to that.
We don't want him to leave.
Exactly.
And let me say this, that
he could just show up and read the newspaper and there's value in that.
Yeah, he can walk into a room and tell the patient they need 3 crowns and they don't ask how much, they just say when.
So what's holding you back from buying his half and saying, look we're just gonna pay you 35% of what you do? Like really good. Like a really good deal.
Nothing.
So do it.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't mean to be the
really,
dick.
He said he's very black.
I'm in the dick
white.
In the room, yeah, no, but like, yeah. I'm seriously, because ultimately, at the end of the day, you have a family, you have kids.
Right.
There's a significant amount of income on the other side that you're not getting, and the reality is, and I would imagine if I were to jump into your practice on a day to day basis, you're doing more ownership and managerial roles and running your office and your team, and you're more of a leader.
Have you been in my practice already? I mean,
no.
it does sound like you've been there now.
But,
no, and I will say this too, that I'm blessed to work where I am, because I getting that experience to work with my dad has been priceless.
But,
and another thing is they give me so much. They treat me like an owner, even though I'm not.
But you shouldn't apologize for that.
No, I shouldn't. The other thing is it would be nice to be rewarded.
Exactly. And so that's my point. Is
right.
Like, look,
I need to dive in and take the risk. 100%,
man.
Yep.
You and I both, and I say this all the time. I'll be the first one to say, like, I am blessed beyond belief to have the foundation that was laid before me and that sort of thing. And like, and we both are. But at the same time, we shouldn't apologize for the fact that we were given some sort of a leg up. And if anything, we should be just freaking running it down the pipe, you know, to take advantage of it. And so I think that becomes, the time is now.
Right.
You know.
No, I agree. Maybe it'll be next week.
Boom. Okay, Zach, let's talk about your situation then. Since we're on the topic of just
Mine's different than his, and it's a little more gray, I think.
Well, tell us a story, because I think
kind of exciting.
Again, this is the beauty of it. Is like, it's a reality of a real situation.
So I'm a first generation dentist. No one in my family is in medical anything, and so I mean, my family hates the dentist. So I got to be the dentist, and they don't like that. But I did a residency because coming out of dental school, I didn't have that practice to go into. I didn't know where I wanted to go. And so I did that residency because I wanted to learn, you know, I want to learn implants. I want to learn sedation. I need to get better at endo because God knows doing 10 of them in dental school doesn't really count for much, you know. So
6 of which were plastic teeth.
Yes. So, you know, doing something, you know, the residency was big for me because I felt like I would be able to bring more to practice. And in my mind, I thought I was going to be able to finish residency and be like, all right, rather than begging for a job, I can finish this and walk out and say, all right, who wants me? You know, y'all fight for me now, which in reality, you know, sorry, that's still not what happens. But, you know, you do have more to bring to a practice. Your production is going to be higher. You're going to be able to get out.
How was that? Because that's a very common question.
Yeah, I think that
people say, okay, I thought
I was going to be able to come out.
Was it a big benefit, or how did that work, or did it give you leverage at all?
I think it did give me leverage, because if it was me applying for a very favorable job against 4 kids that were straight out of dental school, or had been practicing for a year, but were just doing drilling and filling, and you know, they didn't do implants, they didn't do sedation at all, they didn't do molar endo, they hadn't gained that confidence to do full arch restorations, opening VDOs, that kind of thing. That 1 year residency just gives you enough so that you can start to get into those things and maybe tackle them with
right,
some confidence.
Let's think about it. What general dentist who's so busy that they need an associate wants to take time to teach that associate how to do those things?
No, that's true.
So, I mean, you got to find that's why they fail so often, is because it's very difficult to find that,
was that it like
great mentor dentist.
60-some% of associates
that
fail?
That's a phenomenal point, because and that's the problem with a little bit of our whole industry, is that, like, we have dentists who only look for associates when they're like, they realize they need like work done.
I'm too busy and I need to make money when I'm gone.
They have zero desire to mentor.
Yeah.
And so then we're like,
So my first job wasn't ideal, but I did learn from it. I learned some of the business aspects that were really, they made an effect. I learned a lot. And then the job that I'm at now has actually been amazing. And I have that great mentor that I was really lucky to find. And we talk about implants. We talk about sinus lifts. We just, you know, kind of game plan things off of each other. Andy teaches me the business aspect and managing the staff and dealing with patients. And so it's been a blessing to be where I am now. And so I'm still an associate. If he offered me the chance to buy in, I would in a second. But I think that it's just been where right now I'm in a position where my wife and I don't have a city or anything that we're really tied down to. And so haven't bought in, which is a blessing. And it's something exciting that we, you know, we get to talk about and dream about, like, where are we going to end up, you know, and that kind of thing. And we'll see where, you know, time puts us. But right now it's just a matter of, I have this awesome opportunity to learn from somebody that's doing such an amazing job. And he runs such a, you know, big practice. He's figured all these things out. He's 10 years ahead of me. And he's figuring out all these headaches that I even bring ideas to him, and he goes, yeah, I tried that once and it failed. And he tells me why, and I get to learn from that. And so it's been great. We get along really well, and we have another associate that loves some of the things that I don't love, like pediatrics and some little things here and there. And between all of us, she will send me an implant and then she'll restore it. And then I'll send her peds and it works great. The group practice model in our office has been fantastic. Not to mention as I'm just an associate, but you know, I'm gone this weekend and, you know, a day next week and she's going to cover for me and he's going to cover for me. And it's not even a big deal, like no sweat off our back. I'm covering from him in 2 weeks while he goes on vacation. So having those other people there to cover for you. And then also in the practice, we speak so highly of each other that the patient's almost like, sure. You know, if I say, hey, you know, he can do this for you, it'd be great. He's really good. They're just, they trust me and they trust him. And it's really been a learning experience for the past year. But I do think that ownership is something that in order to get past my loans, which is something that a lot of dental students will have to get past, I feel like even if I max out my potential in doing, you know, if I was doing $1 million in production a year by myself, just my doctor production, $1 million a year, you take my percentage and what I would get paid, I'm still not paying off those loans for a solid number of years with your basic living expenses and your, you know, insurance and here and there. And
your spouse is living your big sky condo.
Just little things that, I mean, who wants to cut a check for, you know, you're making $6,000 that month or $10,000 that month. Who wants to turn around and give $8,000 to a loan? You know, it's...
Look, dude, I totally agree with you. And that's my...
Yeah.
That's my problem with corporate dentistry, frankly, is people... I see so many young dentists who are graduating who have this big loan burden. And so what do? They look for the guaranteed income, right? Because it feels like it's safe.
$500 a day, please.
But the reality,
sign on the line.
The reality is that if you take that kind of guaranteed income, that you could never pay off your student loans.
I actually graduated 3 years ago?
Yeah, like that. we were three years in May.
Yeah.
By the time this airs, like it will probably be 3 years.
So we graduated 3 years ago. I did do a year of residency, which put me behind, and I deferred for that year, which in hindsight was not the best idea. But my loans now, I believe, are actually higher than my loans whenever I graduated. I think because the interest, I rack up 15 to 20 grand in
and
interest
that's insane.
A year.
Insane.
It's nuts. Yeah.
And you're making a good living being a freaking dentist, doing dentistry.
I make
dentistry.
More than a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Because we have a wonderful, you know, a wonderful job. But at the end of the day, interest rates are what they are. Banks are where they are, loans are where they are. But so I truly feel that there's no way that I will pay off these loans with my level of comfort, being able to put a little towards retirement, a little towards this and that kind of thing without being an owner. And so that is something that I think about often and just keep my eye on. But you know, at the same time, when I work with these residents now and I help them look for jobs, the corporate thing, I don't think is going anywhere because so many people do want to find that guaranteed pay right out of school, easy job. Hey, I don't even live in Denver, but I want to live in Denver. And there's a corporate, I can go work at corporate X in Denver and they're going to pay me $500 a day. By all means, take that to your advantage and go for it. Because your first 6 months of practice, like you still don't know what you're doing.
No, I agree.
Your first year, you have no idea. And you're just kind of winging it and learning and trying to hold on. And so I do think that you can use it to your advantage. But I think it's kind of one of those things, temper your expectations and give what you can out of it. I do think there's some corporations that are better than the others. And I have friends that have worked at a bunch of them. And so I do know that there are some better than others, especially in the CE they offer you in the training and that kind of thing.
100%.
So I think take it, use it as a springboard into your career that you want to grow, but maybe not the end all be all for most people that owe 300 grand coming out of school. So.
Okay. So I kind of want to twist the conversation a little bit. There goes my wife. Love you, babe. Good night. I want to kind of bring you both in on this. It's somewhat of a conversation that we've discussed tonight a little bit prior to being on the mic. And that's a lot of times, every day, we're going to have reps come into our offices that are offering the latest and greatest composite, the best material, the new bonding agent, the impression material. I'd like to hear kind of how do you both deal with that conversation, try materials out. Tell me your experience in doing that, maybe pros, cons, that kind of thing. And just because that's a reality of like something too. Like I remember when I graduated, I thought the only composite was aesthetic X.
I will say,
which is a terrible composite.
I will say that I think reps do like the younger doctors more than the older doctors.
Probably. Because you're like fresh food.
We're like, yeah, well, yeah, that's the best stuff. I'll use it.
So Parrish, you start us off and tell us. I mean, because I'm sure they come into you like going, these other guys are retiring and they're old and here you are. You're the next guy in line. I mean, how do you deal with that? And just talk
about
that.
Are you the guy at your practice?
Usually, if so, if someone's coming into the office, I'm usually the one that's most likely to give them any time at all. Right. But I think they deserve it. You know, if they're willing to come into your practice and they're, I would say, halfway intelligent, which a lot of them are. You know, and it's not just that they know about their product. They know about their competitors too. You know what? I always felt like one of the hardest things to possibly be was a salesman, because at any given time, your product has to be the best. But we know that if there are five companies, and we know there's a lot more than five, if there's five companies, each one of those salesmen
thinks has their product is the best.
They may not, but they have to act like it. And to try to pull that off, you know, and it not, if you know you're number three and you have to act like you're number one, that's just a terrible job. Hard. So I give them a little respect when they come in, bottom line. But I also, first and foremost, I tell them up front, I'm honest with them and say, I will always be honest with my feedback about your product. It may not make you feel good. It may.
And that's huge.
It may hurt your feelings. And it, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you just really have to say, look, this is not personal. But it's business. And that time, it's also patients. It's also patient care and providing them with good care. So that's a challenge. But now I'm very upfront with them. I treat them very seriously. I respect their time because I want them to respect mine. But that same token, though, when they come in, I'll let them do their thing. I'll ask them a few key questions to see if they really know what they're talking about.
Right. Kind of.
If they falter in knowing.
Give us an essential, example of that.
Well, I mean, you know, someone comes in and they want to talk about their cement. You say, well, what's the compressive strength? You know, you just ask them simple questions.
Like, it's good.
You may not even know what it is.
I'm
you
not
may
sure not even what know. The compressive yeah. strength is.
You may not even know if it's important or not.
Pascals is that.
You know, if it's composite, you know. So what shades do you offer that in? I mean, it doesn't even have to be like technical questions. You're just saying,
are they somewhat prepared
right,
at all?
Right.
I get that. Yeah.
You know, and the other thing is, are they coming in with someone else? Are they being dragged in by a vendor? Or are they actually there on their own? Because to me, someone who comes in on their own, one has a, you know, has some confidence, but they're also going out there and actually trying to work hard. So I always give them respect, always give them time whenever possible. And then, but I always, you know, give them a chance to talk, but then I always ask them questions. And I know, and I'm hard on them.
So what do you do with, so obviously, like let's take composite for example. They're going to give you samples. That's right. Really, how do you deal with that? As far as and usually, a little bit of this is me cherry picking advice, because I'm like, they'll come in and give us samples. I'm like, when am I supposed to use these? Should I use, you know? How do you deal with that?
Well, is it first of all, just so you know, just yeah, so you know, like, if I'm they're like, giving you something, it is safe to use on a patient. Just yeah, so, okay, well, let's clear that up.
We all agree that.
So,
yeah.
So, but you know, usually what I do is I let it sit on my desk for a little while.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like letting a steak age. You know, you just kind of let it sit there on the desk for a while.
It's good for the composite.
And if it doesn't get covered up with too many pieces of paper, typically the first thing I'll do is, if it is composite, I'll just squeeze it out. I'll just sponge it out and see what it comes out looks like. And then, you know, the next thing, of course, is, you know, sitting there and putting it in your operatory and then just telling the assistant, give me that new stuff. And hopefully you've had a conversation with her what the new stuff is. But and sometimes you don't want to really do it that way right in front of a patient.
Give me the latest and greatest.
Yeah. But
unless they're sedated and like, give me that shit Cindy brought. Let me try that.
But, you know, just push it in there and see what it feels like and see if it's better than what you got, you know. But
so talk to me about implants, though, because, you know, you might have been trained on one implant.
I was trained on BioHorizon.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I have played some implant directs, which shout out to Collie, my boy. He's our rep. He's good. And I've liked him. It was an easy transition in between the two. But what if somebody came in and he's really good and you want to start trying to play some Nobels and you've never done it once in your life?
All right. So let me say this one thing before we jump to that. I'll say this, that As much as you can like, and you should like, and you should respect your vendors, or a salesman, don't ever buy a product just because you like the person. Because that is definitely hard, because what you're doing is you're in some sense, you're giving them feedback that their product's good, when in reality, it may just be your relationship. And I'm not saying you shouldn't foster a relationship with these people, but at the same time, don't make a purchase decision based on who they are, because tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, they may be working for another company.
And that's, in the dental field.
You know, and they're doing
that is what's actually crazy.
And they're doing that from their best interest too.
Yeah.
And don't hold it against them when they change companies, because you were the one who decided to buy their product.
Yeah.
And if it was a good product, then you made the right decision.
In the dental industry, and I look at Eileen, I'm lucky, obviously, because in both of us are, we look at our, like, I look at my dad, and like, dad will be like, yeah, so-and-so, he worked for Ivoclar, and then he went to, you know, freaking Vita, and now he works for Dentsply, and now he's the BioLase rep. You know, it's like, it's a very small, ancestral...
It's a niche group, and you're going to see the same
world
people.
That you have to be careful about that from the sales side. I agree, yeah.
But dentists can also get stuck in a rut. It may not be a bad rut, but... So
sure, 100%.
If I've got an adhesive that I'm having absolutely no problems with, and then someone comes in and says, here's the new greatest universal adhesive, and mine's better than the one you're currently using, you may be trying to fix a problem that I don't have. And so, again, that's a hurdle for them, and it takes a little longer for to contribute or to actually change products in my office, because if I'm not having problems, I'm not really, don't have any urge to change, but doesn't mean that I won't try it. It just means it probably sits on the desk a little bit longer. And if they come back by and say, have you used it? I tell them no. You know, that's the other thing is if you tell them you've tried something that you haven't tried, you know, that doesn't do you any favor.
No, so you're not
just
winning.
You just be honest with them. Say, no, you know, usually I have a 10-week policy. You know, I let it sit there on my desk. And then after 10 weeks, if it's still there, I'll use it.
I think that's a really good advice about when to decide to use it, because that's something that I've been given samples and it was tough being a young dentist. You don't know kind of when to dive into something or, you know, what's a good time to try this new stuff. And I feel like I can't use it on this patient because I like this patient. I don't want to redo this.
And you mentioned implants. Implants are not something that I would try one this week, try one next week, because when we think of direct composites, we think of, well, if it lasts 5 years, great. But when we think of implants, we want them to last 20, 25, the life of the patient. And I'm not saying that all these systems aren't tried and true, but, you know, I feel a lot better when my composite failed than when my implant failed. And I say, I don't feel good about either one.
100% though. Yeah.
I've had some reps come and give some things and give us some samples and all that. And my personality wise, which is something that I would, as an associate now, I don't have to worry about as much, but as an owner in the future will be something that I can confidently say that I'll probably struggle with a little bit. I'm just very non-confrontational. And so giving them that positive feedback that you talked about is something that would be hard for me just personality wise. It's not something I can look at somebody in the eye and be like, yeah, man, this kind of just sucked. You know, didn't like it, didn't handle good, thought it didn't look good. And that's something that,
but you know, they actually, it's interesting. Yeah. I've got some friends in this, you know, this kind of industry, and they actually tell you when you give them true, honest feedback, it helps them because it knows what's that little hurdle?
It's like the damn digit.
Yeah. Well, how do I present this better next time to the next doctor? Or, you know, what am I looking for? How do I go back and give feedback to the developers, the people who are actually making this product? Because it's not the people that are in your office. They're not making the product. They're not responsible for it. They're responsible for selling it. And if the product's getting bad feedback, then they need to be able to go back and tell them what that feedback is instead of just saying, yeah, you know, I don't like it.
It sucked.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't help them at all.
What's it like being an associate and dealing with products and that sort of thing? Have you all found that your doctors have been open to you being like, you know what, I kind of like the material, or are you kind of hands tied?
Because I'm younger, I think I can, or newer into practices, I think I can maybe answer a little better because coming in, teaching in the residency and like, being a resident.
Like, do you get to use the bonding agent you want, or are you bonding what you're given?
Hey, here's your bonding agent. This is what we use. And as a resident, I even teach in that residency now. And we just finally, through some coaxing from some of us, we were using a Z100 composite, which I mentioned to a rep.
I trained on that in dental school, Z100, Z250.
Yeah. I mentioned that to a rep, and he goes,
one time.
He said, they still make that? Like, we were so past that, that he was surprised they still even made that stuff. And it was terrible, in my opinion. But at one point, it was probably really good.
What I learned about schools and that sort of thing is, like, it is so freaking political.
Yeah, just whatever. That was what we had a good deal on, and that's what we bought 5,000 carpules of. And I think we just made it through that, and we finally got some newer stuff. But as an associate now, I think it's something where – in the first practice I was in, I was given something, and they worked a deal with this person because they own five practices. We're going to get a better rate out of them, and we're going to use this material, which is fine. Did I enjoy the material as much? I think there were some better things out there. I did, but you know, I was given that, and I didn't
have
a choice.
You didn't have a lot of
choice.
I would expect if you're entering into an associateship, I would go into it expecting to use what the existing doctor has.
Exactly.
And as you earn their respect, I think you're also going to earn power in the sense that, hey, this is something that I've been reading about, researching about. I want to try this. Or have you tried this? Let's consider it.
That's spot on.
That right there is the night and day difference between the first two associateships that I had. And the first one, I had zero say. They weren't in the office. They didn't care for the way that I felt. They didn't care. In the office now, I can bring up any tiny idea, whether it be 3D printing or new implant system or the bonding that we're using or the desensitizer, you name it. And he's going to listen and say, oh, awesome. Like, show me some of the new research. We'll look at the prices and let's do it. And he's all about it and he's engaged. And it's something that's what I look for. And that was something that I felt whenever I was looking at the associateship, that was what it was going to be like.
Did you feel like there were things like, so well, let me rephrase the question. So a lot of times I'll tell younger dentists, be like, look, I think that's huge. And so what I'll tell them is, like, you kind of very early on, you need to pick things that are like very surefire things, because it's almost like you're proving ground, right? Like, when you kind of come to them and say, hey, I want to try this, whatever, like, you need to deliver,
yeah,
you know, especially early on. So like, there's certain things that you have to be like, you know, maybe like, and for me, like, I love cone beam. So I'm always like, I think cone beam is a great one. And say, like, if I'm going to go to bat for something, it's if there's a big thing that I want our practice to invest in, for like Paris, it'd be like, I want to cone beam's the one thing I'm like, the torch I'm going to carry, because I know that, like, that will deliver.
And all the background information, like, you know, profit margin per patient.
Yeah, whatever it is.
And so,
would y'all say that there's certain things you have to, that, like, that's good to do that way?
Well, there's nothing that says that you couldn't make him an offer and say, look, you know, I want to cone beam in the practice. You say no. I'll make the payment and let's renegotiate our terms so that any amount of efficiency or any amount of extra production based off of this new product that we brought in, you know, and you make out some kind of new deal or offer, you know.
Because right now I'm about to offer Parrish a deal where I'm going to buy the cone beam. He's going to pay me.
It could be
30% of every production that does with the cone beam.
It could be sleep dentistry.
I know that he would do so well with the cone beam.
It could be sleep dentistry as an associate. They don't do that at all in the practice you're joining, and you see, like, wow, I have an opportunity.
A
well,
niche.
let me negotiate this real quick. I'm going to pay the $3,000, $5,000, whatever it may be to get this training done. And then, you know what? I'm going to negotiate this deal.
That was a good point. So
huge.
CE.
Yes.
You pay me 100% of everything that comes from this, because otherwise you wouldn't get it.
And that's a problem, because, so both of you, I'll ask you the question. Did you only do CE that the doctors you were working for paid for?
No. I did the CE that I thought that I wanted to learn, and that would improve my dentistry. But at the same time, in my mind,
it never crossed your mind that you would be doing something potentially that they would be making more money off you,
right,
even though you pay the CE.
Right.
Because that's the shit I hear all the time. Is like, right, like, I don't want to go pay for $7,000 to learn to place implants, because they're going to be making more money off me because I place implants.
So in my way I exist,
I agree with you. I think that's low-minded thinking. I mean, I agree.
My practice pays for my CE, particularly even if it's the new stuff. So I went out and did 6 months miles. And so I added maybe $100,000 to the practice 1 year just from doing orthodontics. And did I get all that? Heck no. And that was a way I improved my worth to the practice.
But let's say for a second that they didn't pay for your CE to do that.
Then I would have asked for 100% or
So, you know, but as my point is, I think you have 100% of the right to renegotiate it any time based on that.
What so, yeah, if I said, look, I did this recently because I've added doing some aesthetic procedures, Botox, dermal fillers, and I went to them and I said, I'm going to pay for my own education with this. And any
I want 100% of the proceeds.
Yeah, I want 100% of the, yeah, after we pay
whatever
the cost.
Overhead is. So, yeah. So my thing with this is, I'm all on board.
My wife just gave me a bad look because I haven't done that training yet, and
Caroline's loving it.
Well, she's already on my schedule.
I was joking.
I'll be at one of those courses in the next 6 months.
The most Botox
months.
I do is on family members, 100%. No, my thing is though, Parrish, I don't want to say I disagree with you, but like I will say, so here's a big complaint, and I see it all the time with implants because I will see dentists who are associates, young dentists as associates, who the older dentist doesn't want to pay them to go do the CE, whether it's 6 month smiles, soft tissue grafting, implants, just whatever it is. Okay. So then they get hung up on whether I should do it or not. And so let's say it's 6 month smiles. Let's say it's ortho. Okay. So they're going to come back and they're going to do $60,000 in ortho in that year or whatever, but they're only going to get paid their 25% of collections or 30% of collections. My point is that I don't give a crap whether they're paying it for or not, because ultimately they're investing in their future, okay, their career. And at the end of the day, if you're getting paid off collections, okay, and you're sitting on your ass waiting for fillings and crowns, and you have the opportunity to invest, let's just say you invest $6,000 to go learn to place implants, and you do $50,000 in implants, and you get paid 10 grand, you know, whatever, plus or minus, you made money. So like it was worth the point. So my point is,
absolutely,
and you made money in 1 year, much less the rest of your career.
I agree with you in that, like, yes, if you can work out a deal, and frankly, should your senior, like, look, if
let's be, yeah, the senior doctor you want to work for, let's be a little more long term.
Like the senior doctor you want to work for would pay for the CE. I totally agree. Right, my dad would have been like, yeah, I'll pay for the CE because like I get it. I want to invest in. I'm investing in you because investing in you is investing in my retirement. Like he got it, right? Same thing with you. But if they're not going to do that, does that mean that you just don't do it?
No.
And that's what I get so pissed about is like, don't freaking go learn to play Zimpl. Like I get so pissed off when I hear dentists complain about, I don't have anything. I'm an associate and I don't have anything to do yet. They aren't placed that they haven't learned to do anything else, but the senior doctor is doing no specialty procedures. They're referring everything out. And it's like, well, freaking go learn to do something.
Go help yourself.
Yeah. Like spend some money. Cause like, it's going to be better for you. And so that's my point is like, at some point you have to take the risk yourself, even though it means more loans, more debt, because
I 100% agree with you. And in a position where I still have loans, I still would agree, invest in yourself, go do the training. And that was what I did for a residency. I took a pay cut and decided to go work as a hospital 100%. Resident for a year.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get paid half of what my friends got paid.
You learned to place implants.
I learned to place implants. I did sedation. Yeah. I did a lot of things. And I thought that was worth it for the future. And I think it still is looking back. The other side of that I will say is, if your doctor won't agree to that, then you may need to take a step back and look at who you work for.
Because, like I said,
I've worked in two practices.
Maybe that's not the guy long term you want to be with.
Yeah, but and a lot of associateships don't work, and that's fine. You learn and you move on and you go for it. But the thing that I knew that made me so comfortable about who I work for now is the day that I was going to. We were talking about signing the contract and that kind of thing, and he looked at me dead in the eye and he said, the day you sign this contract, my job is not to do dentistry. My job is to give you work to do, woo, to make you busy and to make you successful.
Man. Gosh, that's good.
And I thought like, well, that is 100% different than the old guy that I used to work for. So that for me was something that I thought was really.
The only thing that'd be better about that deal was to make you an owner.
Yeah, well, you know, that too. But, you know, maybe in the future, that's what I'm hoping for. So, you know, in the meantime, work my tail off, do my time. I feel like I'm still a young gun. So when you first get in a job, you know, be there when the sun comes up and work till the sun goes down and put in your hours. And then at the end of the day, they're going to know what you add to the practice and, you know, see where where everything falls. See how the cookie crumbles, or is that just Anchorman? I don't know.
Where the ducks fall in a row.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't know. I think that a lot of people I know that are in a position where they're not happy with the what they do and all that, I think that they're also just not in the best position. They're not around the right people that are confident and you know, have their best interests in mind. So,
well, look, the reality is we spend a lot of time and a lot of money to get our degrees, learn what we do. I'm a believer in that we should be shooting ball. I mean, go for it.
Absolutely.
Like at the end of the day, it's like, do what you want to do.
All of our classmates that I know that are still, you know, a couple years out of school that have done, whether it be ortho or whether they be implants, and we all text each other and talk to each other, they're all excited and happy to be doing these new things. And I've never gotten a text from a classmate that's like, did a really cool crown today. You know, like, it's just, those things keep me going, and it's all that exciting stuff.
How about this MOD?
Yeah, check out this filling. So I think that, you know, pushing yourself and making yourself better as a dentist, if you quit doing that, man, just drilling and filling I don't think I could do it for a year. So
pure gold. This has been fun. This is a good episode. This is solid content. I appreciate you both for being here and for both doing this. Look, my challenge for both of you is you both need to be owners. You're both two talented dentists. You need to own practices. So I don't know how you do it or what the timeline is, but it needs to be soon. It needs to be happening.
That's the end goal. That's the game.
Because it's just, you know, you're not doing anything differently than you would be doing, but you'd be profiting a lot more. And as fun as it is being an associate, it's worth the benefit of making more money. So business at the end of the day.
You know, finding the right opportunity and the right time and the right place.
I'm being the asshole. It's just freaking saying. I'm just saying it like it is. Like,
hey, yeah, I'm ready. I know that.
I wouldn't say that to you if I didn't think you could freaking do it. That would be. I'm happy to embarrass me. You didn't freaking be like, Dad, it's time.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's happening.
I feel like that's a tough conversation. You two are in an awkward position. No, but I'm not, because I don't have to be like, hey, Pops, like.
Dude,
when you're gonna hand it over? You know.
Yeah. The other thing is that my brother. I didn't mention this. My brother is a dentist. Also,
yeah, wow. That's it.
So,
I mean, that's
that
a huge thing.
I'll pay full price. It's not a discount. It's not
my thing is, I got to the point where I was like, Dad, either you let me buy in or I'm leaving. Because I realized, like, I can do this, and I can, like, math, numbers are numbers. So, like, if you can do this in another place, like, it just makes sense. So, it's at some point you got to do that. And that's my thing is, like, look, when you look at the loans, you look at the reality, like, go for it, do your thing, take the risk. To me, there's nothing. That's the number one thing. If I have to end this episode on something, it's like the beauty of our profession is we get to invest everything on ourselves. And so, like, all the risk, all the gamble is on you, right? Like, at the end of the day, when you, like, throw the dice or draw the cards or bet the money, it's on you. It's on your success. And if there's something that's, like, worth betting on, it's you.
Absolutely.
I like that.
All right.
Thanks, looking forward to
2019. Big skies. 2019.
We'll all be
back in a year.
All right, everybody. Work smarter, not harder. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.